We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, welcome back to another BuzzBeat episode. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Richie, and I'll be joined by Brian today for a Substack mailbag episode. As always, you can check out our Substack chat by downloading the app or visiting buzzbeat.substack.com. We're going to do something different today. We are live on Playback TV. I know it's kind of overwhelming to kind of go through all these YouTube spaces and all these different platforms that we use. So I know there's a feature here that allows our listeners to join the stage. They can request to join the stage. So it's pretty cool to kind of give feedback, ask questions, give their opinions as well. So if that ever happens, Brian, we will do that as well. And hopefully I know how to operate it on my end. But for those of you that are listening on the podcast version, we will put the playback link in the episode notes just so you can join our show, our page, whatever they call it here on the website. But Brian, how's it going? I saw you courtside at Cameron. I'm hoping that they did not impair your hearing too much and you can hear me okay.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. No, none too. I actually thought the crowd at Duke was good last night. I didn't think it was like an A+, like, you know, crowd, like loudness. And I mean, UNC led for 39 minutes and 43 seconds in the game. So like never really had a chance to kind of get rocking for the home team, but always a pleasure to cover that game in person. Yeah. Don't take that stuff for granted. And it ended up being a pretty competitive game altogether. And we'll see, like those two teams may be rematching again in 6 days up in D.C. with the ACC title on the line. But a lot of stuff to happen between now and then.
What's that guy's name? Cormac? Was that the guy that's hitting all threes?
Cormac Ryan, yeah. The 25-year-old shooting guard for UNC, who played at Stanford, played at Notre Dame, was a very good player at Notre Dame on their NCAA tournament team a couple of years ago with Blake Wesley. Is a good, like really solid defender. And look, he got open for some transition threes early, and then he got rolling. But huge. I mean, 31 points was a monster performance from Cormac last night.
Yeah. All right. If you're watching us on Playback right now, you can see our Substack, and I'm going to go to the chat and hopefully this shares our screen and go to these questions that were submitted to us. And the first one that we are going to get to is from Rich, and it says, now with the season coming to an end, how do you guys feel about Brandon Miller? I think your consensus was to take Scoop, but I always thought Miller had a lot more upside for us as a true three or a big two. And like his favorite player, he is smooth like Paul George. So loyal listener here, Rich asked this question. I think in most situations, Brian, like you have to wait 2 to 3 seasons before you make any definitive claims on rookies and like their status in the NBA. But I do believe the Hornets made the right decision just, you know, looking at it right now. I think out of the four of us, I was probably the least committed to Scoop, but I think a lot of that had to do with my lack of knowledge, like just not having a full picture on Scoop, not having a full picture on Miller. I didn't want to commit one way or the other, but it is interesting to see how like the fan base has, you know, there was a portion of the fan base that wanted Scoot and now they've kind of rallied behind Miller. And I really haven't been keeping close tabs on the Blazers or Scoot, but you can kind of just take a quick glance at some of his counting numbers and his shooting efficiency numbers, and you know that it hasn't been awesome. Like, it hasn't been great. And then Miller, on the other hand, has like steadily improved throughout the season. He's always been in the conversation for like a top three, top five rookie in the NBA. And he's won multiple Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month awards, which really hasn't been in the conversation for Scoot at all. But before we get deeper on Brandon Miller, the player, Brian, what do you think about having conversations, evaluating rookies, and kind of making declarations now versus 2 years from now? Like, is this a fair conversation to have right now?
I think it's fair with the sort of like obvious caveat that you just applied, which is that like more information will be better and we'll know more once these guys have played another 100 more NBA games. Because evaluating someone like Scoot is tough right now. Like, he's a teenage point guard on a really bad team in a team that the Hornets sort of like end to end handled a couple of weeks ago. And a team that just, you know, still sort of like looking for a direction. It feels like there's going to have to be some big changes there before they sort of like set course. And yeah, it's been a tough season for Scoot. I wish he could have played in that game against the Hornets, because I haven't had the chance to like see a full game of his much this season. And yeah, it's like the, you know, going back to the Scoot Miller debate, you know, Rich is right. I preferred Scoot as a prospect and thought actually that there were some ways for Miller and Henderson and LaMelo to fit together. I was very high on Scoot, and I will say, like, I think he's underwhelmed a little bit this season. I still long-term am going to remain optimistic on him becoming a you know, good NBA player. But Miller is a little bit older too. So like, he's just sort of like ahead of the curve. You just gotta be careful, because like, there's plenty of basketball. These guys have their entire careers ahead of them. In the next couple of years, there's going to be a lot of changes. You know, there's going to be growth. There's going to be, it's not all linear. So I still remain optimistic on Scoot. I don't want to write him off again, playing on quite possibly the worst team in the league, maybe outside of the Pistons. As a very young point guard, and he's dealt with injuries. So like, it's tough to put too much weight onto his season, but maybe like, I don't feel great about like evaluating Scoot at this point, but someone like Miller, I think there's a decent amount of data to suggest that like the Hornets really have something going forward. And not just like a nice player to have, like maybe you felt after they drafted PJ in 2019, but like, truly like foundational player with like superstar upside. And I think it's hard even for those who are like, were skeptical of Miller or concerned with him. I wouldn't have described myself as a skeptic, because I still thought of him as like a top four or five prospect in the draft. But, you know, I think he's at this point, he has to have exceeded everyone's expectations so far this season, maybe outside of his own. So I don't know. How do you feel, if I turn the question on you, Richie, how do you feel about sort of like evaluating guys at this stage of their career?
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, I think overall, you know, this is not the point to make that declaration, but I do think you know, at this point, like I can definitively say that the Hornets made the best decision they could. You know, Brandon Miller's averaging 17 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, 49% on twos, 37% on threes. And I think we always knew that Brandon Miller was the guy that was more like NBA ready right now. And the draw with Scoot was the fact that he had potential. He had a little bit more runway to work with, or he needed more runway to work with. So I think evaluating Scoot, you're going to have to wait. I think Brandon Miller has actually, you know, provided some things that I did not think he would provide this early on in the year. And I do want to mention, I know you've talked about this before. We've talked about it before, about having more guys that can handle the ball, more guys that can be rim pressure guys. And I think that was kind of the draw with Scoot Henderson, about a guy that can just get downhill, and especially like playing with LaMelo, playing off of LaMelo, playing in the second unit. But to Rich's point, in the question, when you think about some of the star players around the league historically, they're like typically bigger wings. They're forwards out of that position. Now, you never draft a guy because of a specific position, but I think developing a guy that has size, that has some playmaking ability, is a huge plus. So I think Brandon already has that, and obviously Scoot will never get to the same size as Brandon.
The thing that I was really in on with Scoot was just like the rim pressure.
Right.
And I know that hasn't, I mean, he, you know, last season with the Ignite, he took a lot of mid-range shots. I sort of, in my scouting of him, thought that was him just trying to, you know, work on something, sort of like knowing that the rim pressure component was like a bankable thing for him. I just haven't seen him enough at Portland to know like what that's looked like. I feel like he's popped up and had a couple of big games. Maybe he's not quite, and this, I think these alarms were being sound even prior to the draft, where like maybe he wasn't quite as athletic as some of like the S tier, you know, point guard athlete, you know, athletes that have come into the league the last, you know, 5-6 season, year Morant's, like those types of players. He wasn't quite as, you know, north south explosive and fast as those guys. And so, yeah, I think the things that I underrated with Miller, like to me, he felt like very scalable and like a plug and play guy, and someone that I thought had the chance to be in the NBA and like a contributor, two way player, a starter for a long time. But it's the creative, it's the off bounce scoring of his game that has just been better than I anticipated. And the pacing, the timing, to me, there was just stuff that it felt like you could kind of get in his jersey and bother him at Alabama last season. And that does happen some this year. We've talked, yeah. Richie, you and I did a big scouting video pod on Brandon a couple of months ago. And, you know, he still needs to get stronger. I don't know if he's ever going to be like a rim pressure guy, but when we're talking like, you know, archetypal scoring two-way wings that don't necessarily pressure the rim, I think that's a super duper important player type to have. Like, and the reason why I always like worried about the Paul George comparisons is because, one, Paul George was an incredible athlete when he got into the NBA. I think Miller's a very good athlete, maybe not the Paul George pre, you know, injury type of athlete. But George is just like the best version of that. Like, Paul George has been a top 10 player in the NBA for a decade, basically, like give or take, you know? And so to project that on a 20-year-old, you know, after one season of college ball, just like it, to me, it felt tough. It was just like, yeah, if everything goes right, best case scenario. The thing I used when we were doing the video pod was, he does strike me as someone that's watched a lot of Paul George, that sort of like tried to model his game in that direction. And that makes him a really interesting player for a lot of reasons, beyond just like the, oh, is he ever as good as Paul George? Because like what it means is he's now has a really scalable and malleable game where you can see him. They use him every way offensively, except for like posting up. He does basically everything. You can play him off the ball. You can run pick and roll. They're using him more as a screener now in the pick and roll. And that's working in a lot of different ways. I can't wait to see that more with LaMelo next season, or him setting off ball screens to get Mark Williams lobs, like that type of stuff. But if you're thinking of some of the other, like, you know, scoring wings that don't pressure the rim, but that still get pick and roll opportunities and, you know, are sort of like built on, funneling a lot of offense through them, but mostly like, you know, they're guys that like live like outside of 10 feet sort of. Like, you have to feel good about him, like, on the track with guys like Chris Middleton or Brandon Ingram. Watching the Nets game against the Hornets Saturday night, watching the film this morning on Sunday, like, seeing Mikal Bridges, like, you know, you don't want to put too much on Brandon's plate at this point. And, like, Bridges is, like, a very good, very accomplished player, and, like, he's been a scoring threat in the playoffs. So, like, you know, all of this comes with, like, I don't want to get too far ahead here, but like, I think you've got to feel pretty good about him becoming like a better offensive threat than Mikal Bridges, right? Down the line. Bridges is already a very good, offensive player who's done it in a couple different roles, whether it was like, you know, movement shooter, cutter, slip screener in Phoenix versus him getting to play with the ball more. In Brooklyn and run more pick and roll and have, you know, scale his usage up. And I just feel like with Miller, like we've seen the usage go up throughout the season, play on the ball more, you know, work as a primary. I am interested to see where like the playmaking components of his game grow from here. I like the little pass he had to Grant Williams on some drag pick and roll against the Nets where, you know, Grant slipped the screen and Miller's, you know, threaded a nice little lob pass over the top to hit him for a, you know, well-timed, you know, slip layup against Brooklyn's switch. Just as an aside, by the way, like Brooklyn's defense, it was kind of a mess in that game. And I'm not going to lie, they're like the way they were playing pick and roll against the Hornets, like up at the level, like kind of switching, maybe putting two to the ball, then like not being like crisp with their switches. It reminded me of the Hornets from like 21-22, like in the worst ways, just like seemingly not getting caught between like coverages in that opening up stuff for the Hornets. But no, I've been so impressed with Brandon. And I do think like the stuff he does in the mid range is interesting, not because like, oh, we didn't see it much at Alabama last season, which that was part of it, like part of the Nate Oates, you know, money ball approach. But I think you could see enough like short mid range type stuff too. It's like, you know, mid range isn't necessarily like, oh, are you taking like 20-foot pull ups? You know, it's like, which he's doing that, but it, you know, it's also like, are you hitting runners in the 6 to 7 foot range too? Like that is a version of a mid range shot. And like, There's some of that in Alabama's offense, and Miller showed some of that last season too.
Yeah, you mentioned the Mikal Bridges thing. I think for sure his trajectory should be higher than Mikal Bridges.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and I think what you're mentioning right now is just like the on ball stuff. Like maybe Mikal Bridges has it in spurts, but I think Miller's going to get to a point to where he can handle the ball out of the pick and roll consistently and be a threat, you know, in the mid range.
I think it's like already happening.
Right.
Like,
correct.
You know, I mean, it's like Miller's score 0.86 points per pick and roll possession when Miller uses it this season. And on those looks, Miller, he's shooting. Yeah. 45% out of the pick and roll on quite a bit of volume. So like when he's using pick and roll, it's often to get to the mid range. Like he hasn't actually taken like that many pick and roll threes. When he's shooting threes, it's often coming off handoffs, pin downs, and, you know, catch and shoot spot ups, of which, you know, he's been pretty good in all of those things across the board too. But just the mid range scoring is so interesting because like that's the province of like a star player, you know, and like there's a lot of ways to define a star player, but like the guys who get to like, you know, dribble 10 times a possession and take a 17 footer, like those are like, you know, those are your first or second best ball handler star players, you know? And I know maybe he's getting pushed into that a little bit because of the roster and some of the trades they made. You know, no Rozier, no Hayward, LaMelo's hurt. But him doing it and I think like kind of excelling is maybe too strong of a word, but like being very solid and like very efficient mid-range shooter, making good decisions with the ball. Nothing like too ridiculous as a playmaker, but like enough to feel pretty good about his passing and live ball playmaking. Yeah, it's really encouraging. I love watching him play, quite frankly. Like it's been to me, for me personally, in my own little like corner of the NBA, like it's been my favorite part of this season has been watching him do his thing. So could not like to, for me, this has been like best case scenario for him this season almost. And am thrilled to like have him like not just around as like a core young player, but you can certainly, we've talked about this in the pod, but just like him sort of like leaving his mark. It does kind of feel like the team is like, I don't know, like forming around him right now to an extent. I'm not saying like it's his team. Like because like it can be both. Like it can be LaMelo and Miller. And I think that can be good for both guys. And
out of sight, out of mind.
I just like him. I just like them taking on his identity. Like they, I like it. And I cannot wait to see like, you know, he and like LaMelo create easier shots for him and vice versa next season.
Yeah, those pick and roll numbers that you mentioned about like the 0.86, I wonder how those have compared like post All-Star break or post, you know, January 1, because it feels like mm-hmm. he's getting more comfortable with the ball in his hands and you just see it. Like, I think the biggest thing when it comes to Miller, when I think about him, like it's maturity, it's patience, it's like the change of pace, it's his shot making in the mid-range off the pick and roll. Like when you watch him, those things jump off the page. And we obviously know about his 3-point shooting. That was something that was like, you know, the headliner out of Bama, and that still looks like it's going to translate, but his mm-hmm. in-between game, like we're mentioning here, like constantly probing, weaving, keeping defenders in jail on his back. Like he's taking what the defense gives him, but he also is going to get to the rim if he can. He's going to try to get an opportunity for others. Like he'll take that as well if he needs to make the extra pass. Like he's overall, like he's just getting more comfortable as an NBA player, and he doesn't look like an NBA rookie at this point. And I think overall defensively too, I feel like I'm seeing improvements. You know, he's got the size, but just more consistency with him on that end of the court. Mm-hmm. I remember noting like earlier in the season, like a lot of miscues on closeouts, like out of position as the low man. You know, I'm not saying that doesn't happen anymore for him, but I just think with time, Miller's going to get better and the processing seems to come easy for him, where others it's just like five steps behind, where he's getting to the point to where he's processing it a whole lot quicker. And I think that's something that Clifford has talked about too. So any other thoughts before we get to the next question?
But yeah, Miller, 24% usage this season, 10.5% turnover rate, you know, maybe only 11% assist rate. You know, it is what it is, but man, for as a rookie with 24% usage, 55% true shooting, and that's not, you know, it's only with him getting to the foul line at a, you know, not great rate, you know, less, you know, basically 15% free throw attempt rate, plus like him being solid defensively. And it just like the last thing I want to say on Miller, because I think this is something that's interesting, because like I think like the Brandon Ingram comp is one that I'm starting to like think about, chew on a little bit. You know, Richie, I'm not sure how much you watched Team USA play at the World Cup last summer.
I watched
most of their games. I watched a lot of them, and Ingram sort of like they were trying to play Ingram like in like the stretch four Carmelo role, right? Team USA Melo, right? Like the spacer role. And I think he had some moments, but for the most part, like he struggled in the tournament and he struggled in that role. And I am not saying like Brandon Miller is going to be a good, Brandon Ingram's awesome. So I'm not saying Brandon Miller is going to be better than him. I mean, maybe he will, but what I will say is that role of like working as like a, getting, you know, settling more into like a spot up catch and go role, moving without the ball, I think that's something that Miller can take on too. And so that's, I just like his malleability. Like I like the fact that he's scalable and you can play him in a bunch of different roles. He can just be kind of a chameleon for you offensively. And then when you need him to like take over and take a mid-range shot late in the clock, you know, running pick and roll or whatever, he can do it. And so I just think that maybe when I'm talking about his like off ball game, it has sort of like less to do with what his ultimate like ceiling is, because part of that's going to sort of depend on where the playmaking gets to. Can he get downhill more? Can he get to the line more? But just like team building around him, if he's one of your pillars, I think it gets a little bit easier because he's a handoff shooter. He's a spot up guy. He's a spacer. He can do all of that stuff. And it kind of makes me think that like if he wants it, like Brandon Miller's going to be a guy that's going to be like in the USA basketball system because he has a game that would be very good, like internationally too, and in those tournaments, and his competitive level in the two-way play. Like, I could see him being a guy that's maybe on the next World Cup team in 4 years, something like that. But that's way down the line. I don't know. I'll cool off on my Miller discussion here, but I've been so impressed, and I can't wait. I mean, I'm excited to see how he finishes the season and you know what the off season looks like, and going forward, getting to play more with Mark Williams and LaMelo.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, the next question displayed on our screen here in the BuzzBeat Plus Substack chat from Daniel N. Assuming next year's roster is largely similar to the current one with the addition of a top five pick, what do you envision as Grant Williams' role? Is he a starter at the four next to Mark, or would he be more helpful running the second unit, sort of what we envision for Hayward at some point, and then finishing the game with the starters? So to be honest, like I'm not entirely sure. I think this could go either way. He's versatile enough to where in his role, he can be a starter, come off the bench. Like, either situation makes sense to me. I think if Miles comes back and he's on this roster, then maybe Grant Williams is better suited to come off the bench. Like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I don't believe like the Bridges plus Grant Williams plus center, whoever that center is, like those minutes have been all that great.
They have not.
Okay. But the Bridges and Williams, like as the 4-5, like when they switch that up, you know, as the game starts to go, I feel like those minutes have been more positive. So I do think that, you know, Grant has like these connective qualities. He's a good playmaker. It's not like apples to apples when it comes to Hayward, but he's a guy that, you know, probably would rather just play with the starters because he can kind of, I wouldn't say hide, but like he just his strengths just play so well off of guys that can get inside the paint. And so when you see him scoring or playmaking, like it's out of the post, it's out of the wing. So if Charlotte finds themselves having issues in the backup point guard minutes and they need guys to be a connector, need guys to be, you know, someone that's going to facilitate, I don't think it's going to be exactly what you need from him, but he can create opportunities for others, you know, if you need that. And he's going to be able to do that in certain situations. But like I said, I do think he benefits from playing with the starters because he can sit back. He's not a high usage guy. He's a guy that's going to be like a pick and pop player, not actively like seeking 3-point shots by any means. But, you know, he can get his points, like, you know, with his back to the basket, you know, sitting in the dunker spot, like just waiting for his teammates to break down the middle of the court, but kind of before kind of like sneaking into inside the paint. So I think regardless, kind of what this question is asking, whether he's starting, whether he's not starting, he should be finishing. He should be playing a good chunk of minutes with the starters. And, you know, we don't know what the roster will look like, but like as of now, like he should be finishing more games than not.
Yeah, agreed. You laid it out perfectly, Richie. I agree. You brought up the like the Bridges, you know, aspect about it. You know, if he's back, you know, what is that? That could certainly like change things up for Grant too. You know, obviously, like those guys can play next to each other, as you were sort of saying. The lineups with those two plus Richards at center haven't been great so far this season. But with those guys, with Grant as like the small ball five plus Bridges on the court this season, it's only about 500 possessions. But the Hornets pretty good, 118 points per 100 possessions on offense. 56% effective shooting. Then on defense, 113 per 100. So plus 5 points, for 100 possessions, pretty good. And with Grant, you can obviously do a lot of different, despite the fact that he's a small ball center, feels like with a lot of like small ball fives, it's like you've got to have like one base defense that you really lean in on. So it's either like switching or you're like trapping, you know, putting two of the ball. And you can do that with Grant. And like they were blitzing against Brooklyn the other night. But you can play Grant in the drop. You can switch. You can do a lot of different stuff. But I just think because he is someone that he only like brings stuff to the table. He doesn't take anything off. And he's strong, got like positional versatility. Then, yeah, that's exactly the kind of like role player you want on the court at the end of games. This is probably one of the reasons why he commanded, you know, why he was like an effective postseason player for the Celtics at times, and why like the Mavericks thought he would be a nice piece to have next to Luka and Kyrie. It didn't work out. But his ability to play at the elbow, I mean, they run, you know, probably like 8, 9, 10 possessions per game with him there. You know, they throw it to him at the elbow. That, you know, it's either a handoff or Bertans, or they flow into empty side pick and roll with Trey Mann or Brandon Miller, or they run some Chicago or zoom action for the guy coming out of the corner. Or even in the Brooklyn game, they were throwing it to him in with that little corner action and Grant having the ball at the elbow. They're running a little flex screen along the baseline. He tried to hit Miller for like a cut layup around the baseline and just, I don't know. It's either like he threw the pass. He couldn't tell from the camera angle if he like threw the pass too far ahead or Miller didn't like extend for it or whatever. But his passing, his screening, I know like the three is, you know, has maybe been a little up and down at times, but it's like he can't shoot it. He's not a non-shooter. Like, you know, he's proven, you know, in some big minutes he can hit shots. So like just a nice player to have. So he'll play a lot no matter what. To your point, he'll close a ton of games. And I think even if he does start, he's going to be one of those starters who, you know, he'll play like the first 5, 6 minutes, then get subbed out. And then when, you know, when Mark Williams is going to the bench, then Grant comes back in, you know what I mean? At like the 3-minute mark or something like that of the first quarter, if that makes any sense. Like, I think if he does start, he's going to be involved in a ton of hybrid lineups, a ton of small ball lineups, no matter what. Or if he's coming off the bench, then, you know, Mark Williams is playing the first 6 minutes, the first 9 minutes, and then Grant's coming in for him. And then later on, you can get to the Grant Williams with Mark Williams playing together, you know, at the 4-5 combination. I think it will be interesting if, like, assuming that Williams and Richards are still on the roster, Grant's there too, if Bridges is back. Like, I do think it's like a little interesting to see like what the backup five rotation looks like, right? Because like Steve Clifford has traditionally liked having two, you know, true centers in the lineup. And if that's the case, well, then the Grant at five lineups, this is something we talked about a little bit more, like they probably become more of like an end of half, end of game thing, not something you're like, you know, you're going to do for 18 minutes a game or something like that. So I think that's something to monitor. The fact that you have the versatility is really, really nice. And I would be curious to see, like, if they do bring back Bridges, And Mark Williams is healthy and ready to go at the start of next season, and they want Grant in as a starter, and you know LaMelo and Miller are going to start too. Like, I will be curious to see like who ends up being like the de facto, like, you know, other two or three along with Miller in that lineup. Or I guess that would be the lineup. Like, it would just be LaMelo, Miller, Bridges, Williams, and Mark Williams, right? So that's a little interesting. I mean, it's like, it's an interesting lineup. But if you end up moving on from Bridges, you do want to start Grant. Well, then what are you doing at the two or three next to, you know, like next to Miller and in between Miller and LaMelo? Uh-huh. It's interesting.
Where do you rank Grant Williams on this roster? And just in terms of like overall, like quality, like if you were like, hey, I'm a coach, I need these players on the court at the end of the game, you know, I guess I guess you kind of have to factor in position. Like, you can't have all guards or all bigs. But, like, you know, LaMelo and Brandon Miller, when healthy, like, those two are, like, the obvious one-two. Where do you go from there? Like, who's number three, four, five? Like, that's where I wonder where he factors into this. Because I feel like you could make an argument he's three. You could make an argument he's four, you know.
Totally. No, I think he has – I think, like, maybe has to be is too strong. But, like – I think he probably should be in that closing five, whether that includes also, you know, Mark Williams if healthy and Miles Bridges, you know, this lineup we were just sort of just floating a second ago. Or if depending on matchups, you want to be like a little bit more switchy, like, you know, let's say you're playing a team with a stretch five and you want to be able to switch on pick and pops more, then you've got Grant out there, playing with, you know, four other guards and wings. But I think you want him in that because of his strength, because of his defense, the passing, the screen setting. He just does a lot of like winning play type stuff. And the scheme versatility he has guarding pick and roll, I think is something that can't be ignored. And then look, if you're playing a team, you know, if this hypothetical end of game situation is happening against a team that has Giannis, or it's got another like powerful, you know, it's got Siakam or something like that. Like you want Grant to guard those guys, right? Like he's the guy that takes the difficult like hybrid forward matchups for you, I think, at the end of games, as opposed to like Bridges or something. So yeah, I think you gotta have him out there for defense, for his strength, and for like what he does with as a passer. You know, whether it's on the short roll or at the elbow, the screen setting, like I just think all of that is very useful to have around guys like, you know, Brandon Miller and LaMelo.
That's the one thing, and I know you're a PJ fan, like that's the one thing that I love about Grant Williams. Even though he's undersized, he's got the strength. He's a guy that obviously is not going to be able to bang with any and every center, but that is what helps him tremendously, playing him as the undersized five, because he can make sure that those guys get off the block and away from the rim as much as possible. And it feels like PJ was more of a finesse type of defender. Like he had some strength to him, but not to the extent that Grant Williams has. So I think that's a point in Grant's favor. And there's a comment here in playback saying, I would love to see Grant get more 3-point shots up. I mentioned this like in the first three games of the transition over to Charlotte, like he was getting up 3-point shots like crazy at the top of the arc. But I think recently it has dwindled, and he's, I don't know if he's deferred, but he's just kind of gotten inside the arc a little bit more. Sometimes teams leave him open, and sometimes he just like, okay, I'll take this shot. Like you guys are leaving me open, and he'll hit it from the wing. But yeah, I would like to see him, you know, maybe get volume up a little bit more, but I just think he's a smart player that would rather get others involved and make the best play possible. There are times where, you know, he could probably be a little bit more aggressive. So,
yeah, since he got to, man, it's interesting. Like, since he got to Charlotte, just 13 games, 400 minutes, 48% of his shot attempts have been threes, which is still like a good amount. But man, it's just like that is like, that's the career, you know, that is the lowest percentage since his rookie season. I know this is, again, like a percentage of a half a season, basically, but at Dallas, 66% of his field goal attempts were threes. This last season in Boston, 61%. The season before that, 60%. So he's still taking plenty of threes. Like,
right.
You know, I think almost 8 per 100 possessions with the Hornets. But yeah, the volume is definitely down. And I think that's because like they're getting to play through him as a roller and at the elbow more. Like, I'm not even sure that's like a calculated thing on his behalf, as opposed to just like his usage is being funneled slightly differently. Like he's a little bit more like central to like the playmaking apparatus, as opposed to just like being a pure spacer at times.
All right, we'll get to the last question here from James S. If Charlotte does a sign and trade with Bridges in the offseason, what teams could put together a realistic trade package? So, okay, first off, I'm not sure how likely this is to happen. The more that I think about it, the more that I think about this idea, the more I don't see it happening, but maybe I'm just completely wrong. And maybe I'm just like overanalyzing Jeff Peterson's introductory press conference. I feel like he views Bridges as a piece to this team moving forward, but that could just be me nitpicking some of the thoughts that he had there. And without knowing like anything about the draft, how that goes down, without knowing, you know, what trades could occur on draft night, it's hard to get a good gauge of some teams that would be in for Miles. And Brian, I know you wanted to kind of mention this ahead of time with sign and trades, but the base of your compensation. So I'll try to put it out as simply as possible before I pass it over to you and kind of your thoughts on Bridges' future with Charlotte. So there is something called base year compensation, and it's when a free agent that has bird rights receives a 20% raise and has a sign and trade, which he, in this hypothetical scenario, that would fit the bill for Miles Bridges. And so what that means is, like, let's say Bridges signs for $25 million, and whether that's fair or not, let's just put that out there. The team that would acquire him still takes on that $25 million on their books, but Charlotte's outgoing salary for the purposes of the trade would be 50%. So that's $13 million, we'll say. So teams that are acquiring him wouldn't be able to send out, $25-plus million to make room for Bridges. They would have to be, kind of under the cap and kind of compensate for that gap that they're able to send out. So, that $13 million, which is half of 25, give or take, does throw a wrench into the plans of any kind of sign and trade with Bridges, because he is receiving that 20% raise and he's a bird free agent, albeit unrestricted. So, Brian, do you have any ideas for teams? I didn't put much research into this question, and strictly because I don't know what's going to happen between now and then.
I agree with you that whether you like it or not, it does kind of feel like the team, just based off what they said, is sort of like envisioning Bridges beyond starting the season next year with Charlotte. I've made my thoughts on Bridges clear many times on this pod, so I'll skip it this time. And it sort of does feel like any sign and trade hypotheticals, at least from my perspective, they're sort of wish casting a little bit, because he's a guy that I would love to see on another team's roster and not Charlotte's. And it would be great to get something in return for him if he were to leave. I think a team like Detroit is a little interesting, just because
they've got room.
They've got room. They check a lot of boxes. They've got room. They're the NBA team in Bridges' home state, and they're young. Bridges is still relatively young, but it does feel like they're a team that would be kind of desperate to, especially after they've kind of disappointed. They've been terrible this year. And they're paying a lot of money for Monty Williams to be the head coach. I could just see them willing to move one of their young prospects and, some combination of picks. I don't think it would be an amazing package, but take your pick of a prospect. The Pistons have a lot of them. and just try to see what draft picks you can squeeze out of it. And then, so the Pistons make some sense, I think, for a few different reasons. Beyond that, I'm sure there's some other ones to float, but to me, they're the most obvious team, just because there's some regional factors to it, but they have the room, as you mentioned. They have a surplus of interesting young players with upside. At some point, they can't have, or they're probably unlikely to have Cade, Asar Thompson, Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, at some point, you got to think there's probably they're going to have to make some hard choices at some point in time. So they strike me as a team where if you could offer them a still young, ready-made, 21 point per game scorer who can shoot, and that's something they need more of, there may be a team I could see interested in that. I don't know what Utah, the Jazz, what their financial situation looks like, but they're a team that was sniffing around Bridges at the trade deadline. It's hard to get a read for what the Jazz want the next couple of years to look like. I think they want to develop their young guys. I think they want to be competitive, but only up to a point, because this is the second year now in a row where they've made a move mid-season to sort of improve draft lottery odds, that type of stuff. And they've sort of opted away from the play-in, a third, halfway through or two thirds of the way through the season. But their team, maybe they see some interest in Bridges. But those are the two that sort of like strike me the most. I could see him being interested in the Lakers, but like I just don't know how. I can see Miles Bridges in Clutch Sports being interested in the Lakers, but like as far as like that being like realistic, it does feel like that's a little bit tough. And like the only reason I feel like the Suns made much sense of any like this during the hypothetically during the season this year was just because of like the how small Bridges like 1 year contract is, and for a team that's so like stretched financially and really doesn't have much to offer in the way of like young pieces, it seemed like they were an obvious team to sort of like throw their hat into the race. But that feels like less of a thing as like Bridges is about to become like a more expensive player, starting again this offseason.
All right, Brian, I don't have any other thoughts on that question. The name or the team that you just said, the Pistons, I feel like that's like the obvious connection with Flint, Michigan,
yeah,
and just the college connection there and them always being rumored with his name. So we will have that conversation probably again as we get closer to the offseason. But we wanted to thank everyone who joined us via playback today or to those who continue to listen to all of our episodes in audio form. Either way, your support means a ton to us. If you want to show more support, a very quick way to do this is just go over to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star written review, and we will read it on the next episode. So for Brian, I am Richie. Take care. We'll talk to you guys next time.